There are these kids that are playing this aggressive music down in rural Delaware. It's sort of an interesting subculture, I guess. The music's dreadful, but there's something interesting about that dread. They aren't as dark as they think they are, and there's something dark about that.
I mean, it's not some kind of incestuous New York socialite that's been pre-approved by the highbrow elite. It feels very natural to me.
I'll be in the woods. What's up? Doing drive-bys. That's what's up. Take pictures of me, I'm only getting bigger. Getting pumped up. I come to your hood. I tell you what's up. Slaughter you and your whole crew. Murder your family.
This is Adam Shartoff, and you're listening to Film Wax Radio, presented by Rooftop Films. Hello, everybody, and this is Adam Shartoff, your host of Film Wax Radio. Thanks for tuning in. This episode is sponsored by Fandor. What a great service. If you were to look in the mirror and say, who are you, would you include in that description, I'm an independent film lover? Well, if that's you, then go check out Fandor.com. Not only do they have like endless number of lovely and unique feature-length films, documentaries, shorts, and endless hard-to-categorize types of films, but, you know, they've got a couple of blogs. They've got the Fandor blog, and they also have the Keyframe blog, which if you really want to be tapped into the independent film world, you should definitely subscribe to the Keyframe blog and newsletter. And if you do, you'll be apprised of all the FilmWax Radio shows that go on with Fandor, which is a nice thing. So check it out. I believe they're still giving away a 2-week free trial subscription before they start charging a rather fair and nominal subscription fee for something that you'll have endless amount of joy. So that's my plug. One other plug, they're premiering a new independent film called Hellaware. And then we'll go into my conversation with the director of Hellaware. His name is Michael Blandick. I've known Michael and seen him around New York for several years now. Michael directed a film called Happy Life a couple years back in 2011. I met him around that time, and not a big talker, kind of, I don't know, receding kind of guy. I don't know if he's shy or what, but he was very excited to come onto the podcast and do the show, and then he was just a really engaging guy. I really liked having him on. We had a lot of fun. And his new film, which I saw last spring at BAM Cinema Fest, is called Hellaware. It stars Keith Polson, Sophia Takal, Brent Butler, Caitlin Scheel, and a bunch of other folks, but it is it's a good time. Let me just say, it's a good time, and I was glad to have the opportunity to talk to Michael. And by the way, the movie is shot by Sean Price Williams, who I've been wanting to get on the show for a long time. He's a cinematographer, and he shoots all these great films all the time. And he's sort of I guess I could call him a friend of mine. But he also just shot the new Safdie Brothers film, which I saw at a New York Film Festival screening, and it's called Heaven Knows What, and that is a rather powerful film. So the guy has like a great eye, and he's got a great style. So Hellaware does as well, and I urge you to go check it out. But Hellaware is being distributed by Factory 25, and it is opening in New York for a theatrical engagement on Friday, September 26th, the Cinema Village. But if you don't live in New York City, and I guess, you know, a few of my listeners don't, you will be able to stream it on Fandor's website starting September the 26th. Fandor's description of the movie reads, Hellaware gently satirizes the world of highbrow art through the eyes of a wannabe photographer who becomes consumed by the bright lights of mainstream success. Jaded by the, quote, incestuous New York socialite shit, unquote, that sells at prominent art galleries, Nate, played by Polson, embarks on a quest for a more authentic, brand of contemporary art. Listen now to my conversation, please, with the Michael Bolandic. Thank you. We'll see you afterwards. Welcome to Film Wax Radio, Michael Bolandic.
What's up?
I saw your film. I've seen the last two now, I guess. Hellaware at Cinema Fest.
Yeah, that was the premiere.
Yeah. And the film before that one?
That movie was Happy Life.
Happy Life, right. Yes.
Yeah, that played at Rerun for a week, and that premiered at, we played at Anthology Film Archives during this Abel Ferrara retrospective, because he was the executive producer of it, yeah.
Of Happy Life, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. How did that end up coming about? Was that your second feature?
Happy Life was the first one, and Hellaware is the second
one. Okay, so I thought maybe you had made one earlier.
No.
And then decided that filmmaking was not for you, and you decided to go into teaching for a while. Oh, sorry, that's not you. That's Todd Solondz.
Right. Not yet.
I get you too confused all the time.
It's not too late to to give it up and do that, though.
Is the jury out? Yeah. No, I think you should stick with it. But anyway, I'm sorry. So, yeah, tell me the Abel Ferrara connection. How did you...
I got a job working for him. I went to NYU for grad school, and then after that I was working at Kim's for video for a while, and then I quit that to get a job working on the set of Chelsea on the Rocks, Abel's movie, and I became his assistant and wound up doing a whole bunch of projects with him. Mm-hmm. I was a producer on his movie Mulberry Street. We did a short called Dream Piece, and we did this web series for Vice called The Pizza Connection, and we just did a bunch of stuff, and then he was very supportive, and he said we could use his name as an executive producer for Happy Life, and he was someone we could go to for advice, and he was just a positive influence. I mean, I don't know. It definitely helped.
Well, at least in terms of indie creds, I don't know. I mean,
no, when I asked him if I could, help... promoted, he said, this will probably hurt you just as much as it'll help you, but I think it helped us a lot. Yeah.
Is Pasolini his new feature?
Yeah, Pasolini, that's going to be at the New York Film Festival. I haven't seen it.
So, are you going to go to the see it at the New York Film Festival?
Hopefully.
I'm pretty sure I've already got my press, I have press credentials for that, so I'm sure it's already in my calendar to go see it.
Yeah.
You were a film grad student at NYU?
Yeah, I moved to New York to go to graduate school at NYU for filmmaking.
And stayed. Oh, yeah. And where were you from originally?
I grew up in Chicago.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah.
So you moved here graduate? I'm sorry, you may have just said it.
Yeah, then I went to the University of Texas at Austin for undergrad. And I did critical cultural studies type stuff. Uh-huh. And then I moved back to Chicago for a year. And then I moved here 2 weeks before September 11th to go to NYU.
That'd be a very tumultuous start to living here. And then you got a gig eventually at Kim's Video. Is that what happened? Which is was a couple of blocks from where we are sitting now. But
yeah, I worked there while I was in school, and that's
is that where you met Sean?
That's where I met Sean, and that's where I met a lot of the people that worked on both of the movies.
Sean Price Williams, who's also a cinematographer and has a small cameo in Hellaware.
Yes. I like his scene in Happy Life also, where he's the he plays a clerk at Other Music. I think it's one of his.
What does he do?
Plays a dick who works at
typecasting
at a record store that we shot at Other Music, and I think it's one of his funnier scenes. So I met a lot of so both of these movies have been a combination of people I know from NYU, and then a lot of people I've met through Kim's also.
Who else was working in those Kim's days? The mid to late 90s or something?
No, later.
No, you said it was after
mid 2000s.
You already had said that, I apologize.
But it's like...
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter who was working or not working, because everyone was still hanging out there. Sean had quit, but he was still there all the time. And, I worked with... Alex Perry was working there.
Right, Alex Ross Perry, who's also
Robert
at the New
Green
York Film
had
Festival.
Just worked there, and that's where I know Kate Shiel, who's in both of the movies.
I didn't know she worked at Kim's, or she
briefly
she's
before
just,
I was there. But all the mostly just knowing these people from just hanging out there.
Right.
I didn't. It's pretty funny because a lot of them hadn't, really done anything yet, and now it's pretty cool to see.
Right, this sort of swell of stuff. Right, yeah, of creativity and of like the work starting to really get out there. Alex, of course, his third feature now is at the New York Film Festival, so, and yours was a Cinema Fest. I think that's quite prestigious, and it's nice. It's great to see that all you guys not working at the or hanging out at the video store, if you had the option to begin with.
Yeah,
we don't have the video stores anymore.
And then there's a whole bunch of other people, like this guy, Jeff Cashman, was the production manager on both movies. I worked with him. Brian Jackson was an actor in it. And this guy, Abe, who works there, did the poster and stuff. So, yeah, definitely a lot of, met a lot of creative people and people that helped out.
Right. And that sense of helping each other out and, like, obviously continues, it seems, in that mind frame of, or that spirit, I should say, of pitching in and, you know, appearing in each other's films and, you know, doing whatever has to get done.
Yeah.
It seems to be a generosity there, which is nice. So tell me a little bit about, like, Hellaware, and you want to tell a little bit of the synopsis so people know the story of this.
Well, it's basically about this photographer who's trying to make a name for himself and becomes is sort of jealous of the success of some people around him. And he, on YouTube, discovers this suburban rap group called the Young Torture Killers and becomes infatuated with them and decides to do an ethnographic photo series on them. And it all sort of falls apart.
And Keith Polson plays the young photographer who, you know, is sort of feeling a competitive, right, with, you know, maybe motivated by a sense of competitiveness.
Absolutely, yeah.
Do you feel that way at all? Have you felt that way? Like, in terms of seeing maybe...
Oh, completely, yeah, absolutely. But, I think it's a positive thing. I think it's one of the things I like about New York is, you know, people doing stuff, people being successful, and, you know, some sense of aspiring to that and... competition, but
so it keeps you motivated.
But it is a big part of social life is this, you know, shit talking and, you know, just desire, to, you know, jealousy and all that stuff. And I really wanted that to be a part of the movie because that's, you know, a big part of, you know, just social life in general.
Yeah.
And, I don't see it that often.
What's Keith's character and his name again?
Nate.
And Nate is, he's a very, obviously, he's a really well-fleshed-out character, actually, and I think that's a combination of you. You wrote the film, right?
Yeah.
Did you co-write it?
No, I wrote it.
You wrote it all by your lonesome. But between the two of you, you seem to really have fleshed out a real character there, because he's pretty insecure. I mean, first, you know, he's feeling, when he sees other people who he considers less talented, you know, finding success, and he wasn't, that kind of motivates him to kind of do something, which just happens to work. And then, you know, immediately he's looking down his nose at his friends and alienates them almost immediately, like, right?
Yeah, it's really funny. I mean, Keith is just, you know, he's one of my favorite people. He's really funny.
He's a funny guy.
But the character on the page is just such a dick, and Keith is such a... nice person and likable person and someone I just enjoy being around. So I think it did make the character more fleshed out to have someone who I find really likable playing someone who's not likable. And it was, you know, those were like when we were shooting, those are the scenes where the hardest ones for him to do, where he would just crack up in the middle of, he was super professional, had everything memorized, sure. But the parts that were the hardest to do were where he was a total asshole because it was just so out of character.
Was he uncomfortable? You know?
Because it just wasn't him. It was being this total dick.
Right, it made him uncomfortable.
Yeah, so I thought he really fleshed out the character and gave it, made it more multidimensional than just on the page that was more of just an asshole, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. I mean, by the time he really, you can't help it all, you know, see the insecurity there. And then it's also, he's funny. So by the time he starts to act like an asshole, he is, we kind of have won us over, more or less, you know. So, he makes a number of visits to this art. What would you call that role? The art dealer, gallerist. who's this guy?
His name is Gilles DeCamp. He's a photographer in real life. Mm-hmm. He's also like my next door neighbor.
Oh, okay.
So I see him all the time. Yeah, he's just sort of this. He's kind of this wild guy who's he he was a big fan of Abel, and he auditioned. I don't think he really acts that much, but he showed up to the Happy Life audition. He plays this like crackhead techno DJ who's just sort of out of control in that movie, and yeah, he just came because he saw that, I think, Abel's name and wanted to was curious what the project was, and we just really hit it off. And
were you neighbors already? Did you know each other?
We didn't know, and now and then after he did this that audition, I saw him all the time, and I was like,
right.
So yeah, just I really like him as an actor. Yeah, and I gave him a similar sort of character in this one as the sort of maniacal devil figure.
Yeah, he is, and when we never see his eyes.
Yeah,
never, because he's always wearing shades and. But he owns the gal. He owns a gal. He's opening up a new gallery in Bushwick, where the inaugural show artist has dropped out, and so therefore there's an opportunity, and he basically gives that opportunity to Nate. And Nate has to I don't want to give away more than necessary, but Nate goes down to Delaware. To where these kids in this quote-unquote band are, and shoots them like as they right through a few very evenings of debauchery, let's put it that way. And he photographs them, and then those are the photos in the thing. And I guess you don't want to give away too much more of the plot in the sense.
Yeah, right. That sounds good. Yeah.
And so also in the film is Sophia Takal, who's been on this podcast a few times. Caitlin, you already mentioned. A couple of other cameos, right? By people, I guess, we know from... there's a Safdie or two.
One, yeah, we filled up one. The...
I knew the gallery scene. Stuff. Yeah, I was looking. Once you hit the gallery scene, I think I'm going to... And Eleanor is in there.
Yep.
It's lovely to see her anytime.
And she took the photos that are Keith's photos. In the
did she help you cast it? Because she's a casting director too, right? Or a casting consultant, whatever she does.
She helped out a little bit. Rachel, our producer, did a lot of the casting also. And but it is one funny casting story is that they were casting a separate project that was a commercial that was a PSA about coding Robitussin abuse, about robo-tripping. And they were trying to find kids that looked like they could be victims of drug abuse. And they found this high school kid named Hunter who he was in high school, but he didn't quite make the cut for this PSA, but he was a huge cinephile and a film student, and we got him to work on the movie, and he wound up being the cinematographer and helping direct the I'll Cut Your Dick Off video.
So oh, okay.
Sean shot the movie, but the actual music video within it was shot by this kid, Hunter.
Can anybody see this video?
I'll Cut Your Dick Off? It is available, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
No, it got before the BAM Cinema Fest screening. We put it online and it was on a bunch of like rap sites, and a bunch of people sort of thought it was a real video, and it was pretty hilarious.
Well,
but yeah, it's definitely out there. World star hip hop.
The in terms of creating the story, though, where does it just kind of come to you in moments of inspiration, or did you have some experiences and thought this is too great. I have to kind of create a story around it. I mean, did you have any experience where you came across this type of, teenage kind of, this particular sort of zeitgeist?
Definitely, definitely.
You really?
I mean, I'm a big fan of that type of music. Mm-hmm. I like.
Like the Slipknot?
Type of stuff. I love Instant Compost. I love all their Psychopathic Records bands. I like Extreme Wrestling, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I actually had been to... I went to the Gathering... I've been to the Gathering of the Juggalos a couple times.
Which one?
The Gathering of the Juggalos, which is the Insane Clown Posse convention.
Okay.
I went in, like, Peoria, Illinois in the early 2000s. Then I went to another one in upstate Ohio. So I always liked that world. Uh-huh. And I just wanted to make a story that was set in that world, but I never had a story for it. You know, I also like art world stuff, and I think that's a bunch of eccentric characters and... I wanted to do something there, but I never had a story either, and somehow just had the idea of, this character getting in over his head, the sort of passive-aggressive character entering that world, and that was the dramatic starting point and comedic starting point for this story.
Yeah. Well, and that these two worlds can coexist in your film, it kind of creates a lot of humor, but also a really kind of interesting tension,
Yeah, and I really like both of those worlds
a lot. Yeah. it's cool. Do you enjoy writing or?
Yeah, I think I like the whole process, but that's probably my favorite part because, you know, a lot of people talk about how much they hate writing and stuff, but for me, yeah. It's the most liberating part because you can really do anything at that point. No one's telling you you can't do something. There's no,
yeah,
you know, it's really just, I just enjoy it a lot. But then the real nightmare is then when you have to turn it into a reality.
So that's the kind of begs my question then. Are you at that point, you are just sort of going wherever you want to go, no parameters, or do you start thinking, well, yeah, but this is not realistically, this is going to cost too much for the kind of budget I'm looking at, or this is really do you care about that at that stage?
On some levels. I mean, obviously, I didn't do anything too crazy, but at the same time, it definitely, like, this movie wasn't completely constructed perfectly to be a no-budget movie because there's so many characters, there's so many locations, so many extras. It was a real logistical, challenge on a shoestring to pull it off. If I really was writing purely for it to be no budget, it would have just been, you know, two actors in a room. But I took it somewhat into consideration.
I know how you did a lot of your New York actor casting because we kind of already talked about it. These are a number of those folks are in your social circle, or in, if not almost everybody. In terms of some of those primary roles, I should say, I know Rachel, your producer, did do casting, but how did she find the young band members in?
Well, that's funny. That was the biggest challenge, was to find them, and I wanted them to be not from our social circle because
absolutely.
It is in the movie. It's sort of a foreign. You know, he doesn't know who these people are. You don't know what it is. And so we sort of kept to that. It was pretty difficult, but I really... it worked out pretty well. We did it mostly through traditional casting ways. Brent, I believe, was the... who plays Rusty, the lead rapper. He was a friend of a friend. But, yeah, the guy who plays Dr. Consequence, he was working at Best Buy on 14th Street. One of the rappers was working at Guitar Center.
So they are locals? They're all
they're all from around here. Okay. But the main rapper, he is from New Jersey, but he actually is a rapper. Mm-hmm. And he, so that was great to have him, someone who actually could rap.
The one that played Rusty?
Yeah.
What's his name again?
Brent Butler.
Brent Butler. Very talented.
He's great. He has a song that I really like called, I heard a song of his called Dripping, where he's like, I'm drinking and I'm tripping, dripping. And it's really good. And he's great, yeah.
Did he have to try to, was he trying to rap intentionally badly?
I think that was hard for him, yeah, because he is a good rapper.
Right.
And he definitely was not supposed to be a great rapper in the movie, so I think that was a challenge for him to not rap as well as he could.
Like anybody can sing. It's very hard, I think, to fake bad singing if you know how to sing, because it's just... such an uncomfortable place to try to go. It must have been the same for...
Yeah, definitely.
For him, you know?
Yeah, I'd be curious to talk to him more about it. But yeah, I know he was definitely, like, cracking up a lot when he had to do those really bad ones.
Maybe it'll come up and... Or is he going to participate? Any of those guys going to participate in the Q&A? Or maybe they'll just run down the aisle halfway through the movie destroy the theater.
They're, I think most of them are here. The guy plays Dr. Consequence is living in Las Vegas now, so I have no idea if he's going to be here or not. But I hope Brent comes.
Mm-hmm. When you were a film grad student, right? Was it NYU? Was that program still very much into this auteur?
Yeah, definitely.
Philosophy, right? About film?
They make you. They make everyone sort of learn a little bit of everything. It's not like you pick one thing and focus on that. Yeah, it was, you know, like all school stuff, it was, a lot of it was terrible and some of it was excellent. And, you know, there's a handful of really great teachers and a bunch that were, you know.
In a different category.
Yeah.
Well, I ask because I just wonder, you know, you've written and directed both of your two features, and I'm wondering if you would be able, if you would feel comfortable directing something that somebody else presented you or that was already written, in other words.
I would absolutely do it, definitely.
You would.
But, if someone offered it to me, I would. I did, I recently last year did a music video, and that was sort of the first time where it was not totally my idea, and I had to work with some found footage and stuff, and it was something where it really wasn't like a
right.
You were doing something for someone else, and I really enjoyed it a lot, and I would definitely love to do that more.
Was the artist involved, or was it you just, because you said there was found footage, so maybe you
He
just...
shot part of a music video and needed to finish it, I came in and shot some stuff. We actually shot at Kim's, and Sean shot it, and some of the cast members from Hillware are in it for this rapper, Ari the Rugged Man. It's pretty funny because I guess we shot this one music video, the rap video for the movie, that everyone, we put it out there in the world, and everyone was like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. Mm. Because it was, supposed to be the worst thing they'd ever seen in their life. And it was, like, the funniest thing ever, reading all the comments and stuff for that. And then this video was a different thing, where I'm not trying to do the worst thing of all time. And I read the comments, and people seemed to like it, more or less. But I felt like I was really missing those horrible comments.
You were missing them?
Yeah, because it was just so funny. Like, the I'll cut your dick off once.
Yeah. Well... In the case of
I mean, plenty of people disliked it, but it was still... Yeah.
It's just so weird how people... Yeah, I get you, but it's so weird how people will see something they don't like and put an effort into responding to it. It's actually probably more frequent where somebody doesn't like something, they're more apt to respond, right? You're going to get more negative comments. Probably positive comments are, fewer and further.
Yeah, the only time you get positive comments is, like, if something's, like... genuinely terrible, I think, just to fuck with people. All internet comments are some type of bizarre trolling. It's a whole form of entertainment that
eludes you.
I don't know. I like it. I mean, I enjoy reading these things. But
yeah, no, I love reading.
I don't fully understand.
Once in a while, when I get down to the comments, I'm like, why don't I do this more often? I really do need to, because it's just shocking. Or even on Facebook, sometimes you get to some of those threads that are. Whatever reason, they just spark off a really, really long chain of comments, and you can really get caught up in that.
World Star Hip Hop is a really, it's a special form for these comments. It's, they go pretty hard.
Did you say earlier, when I first saw you and we started talking, did you say something, was it Abel Ferrara's film that was at Cannes? What were you saying?
Oh, that was his film, Chelsea on the Rocks.
Chelsea on the Rocks. You went to Cannes for that? Did you also go there? Is that what
I was there for that. It premiered there, and that was, it wasn't like, I had this vision of it being some, like, epic party, some, like, glamorous, wonderful thing, but it was, it wound up just being, like, a lot of, people stressed out in work, and, I don't know, it was pretty intense, but it wasn't, like, vision of what I thought it was going to be.
So after Cinema Fest, though, where did you go with Hellaware? What other festivals did you?
It didn't play at that many places.
Yeah, because it seems the archetypal midnight movie. And do you not want that?
I would love to think of it as that. And I would love to. To me, that's my favorite type of movie.
Yeah,
I love that idea. But yeah, I mean, I would have loved to have played more festivals, but I played at Sidewalk, and it played at Austin Film Festival, and it played in Toronto at this thing Refocus, and
Is that part of TIFF? That's separate. That's a different thing.
A separate thing. Yeah.
Because Toronto does have their midnight movie also.
Yeah, the Midnight Madness.
I did
not play in that.
But Cinema Fest is damn good, though.
Oh, that was great. I couldn't have imagined a better premiere for it, or a better screening. That was, like, super fun. Yeah, I mean, the party was great, and it was, like, a best-case scenario, I thought, for a screening. Yeah, Cinema Fest is awesome.
It is a great showcase. So, a couple of things. One is that it's coming to Cinema Village in the city. Do you have currently any other theatrical setup yet, or are you working on some stuff?
There's a couple things in the works.
Okay, we can keep people apprised of that as it comes up, as you confirm things like that. But what's the website so people can...
Hellawaremovie.com.
Hellawaremovie.com. Yeah. Hellaware, by the way, is that like just as a side note, is that like an expression people from Delaware use?
It's a slang term for Delaware.
That's just more people from Delaware, or those who frequent the state of Delaware may know that.
Yeah.
And at the same time, Factory 25, which is distributing your film, right, has a deal with Fandor to stream the film.
Yeah, it's exciting. I hope more people will see it.
I'm sure.
Yeah, no, it's very cool because, you know, the last thing I did, it just played for, you know, it was nice that it had a life, but this is like, you know, actually having something to be available. It's really exciting. It's cool.
And Happy Life, is there a way for people to see that anywhere at the moment?
There might be. Yeah, hopefully there'll be a way to watch it pretty soon.
That'd be great, yeah. Yeah. Well, again, Hellaware, it stars Keith Paulson, Sophia Takal.
Brent Butler.
And who else should we say is starring in the film, or at least...
Kate Shields.
Kate Shields, of course, yeah. Of course, Kate.
Yeah. Dwayne Wallace. Mm-hmm.
He's the sort of the third in the friendship. Yeah, he's very funny in that, too.
Gilles de Camp, yeah.
Great. Well, you know, it was great finally getting you on here.
Thank you very much.
I think I was... I don't know if I had quite started this podcast when Happy Life came out, but I know I was like... I remember asking you to... I wanted to see after we met.
Yeah,
maybe.
Probably was right around the time. Yeah.
I wanted to see it. When did that come out? Was that 2010 or 11?
2011.
Yeah, it might have been right as I started this, and maybe I was already like, "Well, yeah, well, we'll continue to look for future films of yours, and you'll have to come back. And if you want, choose a filmmaker. We'll talk about them. Doesn't have to be, of course, Todd. Doesn't have to be Abel, but either of those would be fine too. Because you know, one of the fun things that would make me go back. Although I do go back to Todd's films kind of like regularly, I'll just all of a sudden have the deep desire to put on I want to see Happiness, or I want to see...
I'm really obsessed right now with this woman, Ulrika Oettinger. I don't know if you've seen any of her.
Who?
Ulrika Oettinger. She made Madam X, Ticket of No Return, okay. Freak Orlando. I think she could be a sort of a lot of... she's still working today, but she still has stuff in the 70s, 80s, German filmmaker who's super weird, and I really like a lot.
Is this stuff available? I mean,
pretty
you know, widely?
Somewhat.
It would be good also if, like, people could go and maybe check out the films beforehand or something. Even afterwards, just to have the option. It would be good, you know, so if they're inspired after our scintillating conversation, that they can go check them out. But, and also so I can do my due diligence, you know.
Yeah.
Michael, great chatting with you. Thank you very much. And good luck with Hellaware. Yeah,
thanks.
It's funny and it's disturbing, both these things. Yeah, check it out. Cinema Village. And
September 26th.
September 26th, if not sooner. All right. Thanks a lot. Go. That's Michael Belandic, and we'll be seeing so much more from Michael, I'm sure. And by the way, right now on Fandor, I'm just perusing, and I'm going to have to get off here in a minute because I see that this documentary, Double Play, is now available on the site. It makes complete sense that this film should be there. It came out last year, and it was made by James Benning and some filmmaker named Richard Linklater. And it runs at an economical 70-minute running time. It focuses on the friendship between director Richard Linklater and experimental filmmaker James Benning, combining filmed conversations and archival material to explore connections between the work and lives of these two American visionaries. So in a minute, I'm going to get off here and just, I guess, watch the film because I'm dying to see it. All right, guys, listen, this has been great. We're going to be back in a few days. I've got coming up a conversation with the filmmaker from Canada. It's a country that's not far from here. This is one of my favorite ladies in the world. Her name is Ingrid Menninger, and we sat down for a very long, intimate conversation whilst I was in Toronto for their film festival, and I'm going to play that conversation coming up soon. Okay, guys, so... We'll see you around. Until we're together again, I wish you nothing but the best. And, you know, as I always say, if you are interested in reaching out, you can reach me at adam@filmwax.com, or you can reach us on Facebook at, facebook.com/filmwaxradio, or I have my own personal page. You're more than welcome to reach out and say hello. Or you can tweet us at @filmwaxradio. It's just easy to get in touch. Soon, I'm sure, Instagram, Tumblr, all the works. But for now, that's sort of what we can do. Take care. This is Adam Chartoff, your host of Filmwax Radio. Until next time, thank you.